Welcome to episode number 284 of the Family Podcast Network. Today we're going to have another Media Sucks Monday edition. That's right, today is the day we're going to talk a little bit about some articles that you guys have sent me from the media. We're going to go over, first off, our parents who homeschool qualified to teach their kids. Ross going to go over an article sent in about the 2,400 kids who are hurt annually due to shopping cart accidents, and another one of my personal favorites. We're going to talk about girls' toys and boys' toys. That's right. Stay tuned for that and more.
Welcome to the Family Podcast Network, where we help you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Coming to you from Tuscola, Texas, home and headquarters of the Family Podcast Network. Here's your host, Trey Gibson.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. It doesn't matter if you're expecting, if you're a brand new mom or dad, or even if you're a longtime seasoned parent, there is always something we can do to take our parenting to the next level. The date today is February the 10th, 2014. Our topic for today is going to be a Media Sucks Monday. Today we're going to go over a few articles that have sent in by you guys, the listeners, that you guys wanted us to go over here on the show. One of those is going to be our parents qualified to teach their kids. It's going to be actually a pretty good article written by Andrew Cardon, or Cardon, over at The Stir. And it's really good because the overarching thought behind it is that no, you cannot homeschool your kids and be qualified. We're going to talk a little bit about that today. Some of you guys out there know that we homeschool our kids. Trey, why in the world would you cover this article? Because this guy asks all the right questions, and we have answers for those. So we'll get into that and more here in just a little bit. Today, we're also going to send an article that you guys sent me about the 2,400 kids that get hurt annually due to shopping cart accidents. What do we think about the fact that kids are getting hurt inside shopping carts, and they're talking about upgrading the safety restrictions on those? And so anyway, we're going to talk a little bit more about that. Lastly, I'm going to weigh in on for you guys. We've had several people that have been asking about this mentality of girls' toys versus boys' toys. And there's been kind of an overarching debate, especially with an internet meme that has been spreading around about how especially Legos, for instance, has been making very gender-rolled Lego toys. Several of you guys actually have sent these in to me, and there just comes a point where I hear the same article enough. I mean, we've got to do it. So we're going to cover a little bit of that article we found, one over at the Washington Post, over girls' toys, boys' toys. Oy! We're going to talk a little bit about those. What are Trey's thoughts about the fact that there are often very gender-specific roles that the boy and the girl toys are taking? We'll talk a little bit more of that. Before we get into that, just jump into some quick housekeeping, guys. If you want to stay notified of all the new episodes that are coming out in the Family Podcast, simple and easy way to do that. Go to thefamilypodcast.com over on the right-hand side, enter your name and your email address. You get put onto our special mailing list to make sure that you never miss out on that one episode. If you just would have heard it this week, it could have changed everything. Guys, don't forget, you can always support the show by becoming a PTACR, Parents for the Ethical Treatment of Adolescents and Kids. That's just our funny little name created by my wife to talk about helping support the show and see it grow and help more families kind of get connected in here that think like us and believe like us and want the support that we can offer here. So consider becoming a PTACR. You can do that as low as $5 a month, or you can do it at a low cost of $50 for an entire year. And it helps keep us lights on and keep spreading the show and what we can do. Also, guys, if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, concerns, something you want to hear, maybe a show question you want to hear on the air, we can do that for you. You can always go to thefamilypodcast.com over on the right-hand side. Click where it says Ask Trey or Jeff a question. Whenever you click on that, guys, you can record a message directly to it through your computer or your iPhone or your iPad, etc. And so we definitely want to ask you guys to call those in. We love, 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 love taking your phone calls. And speaking of that, if you guys remember, last week we actually featured an article that was done by a lady named Katrina Willis. And we did it over, it was called Expected Grace, and we actually had kind of featured one of her articles. And she actually called in this week. You know, one of the things that I think is interesting is whenever we find those folks that just connect. And she actually called and left a thank you note. I'm going to play that for you guys right now. But I'm doing this because I want you guys to keep an eye on Katrina Willis's stuff. Because, you know, somebody that's willing to pick up on this stuff and call in and leave a message like this, I think it's pretty neat. So if I was you guys, I'd keep my eyes on some of her stuff anyway. Let me play that for you guys real quick.
Hi, Trey. This is Katrina Willis, and I just wanted to thank you for the lovely feature of my blog post today. It was fun finding your podcast, and I appreciate the really, really great things you had to say about what I wrote, and I look forward to hearing more. Keep up the good work. Thanks.
One of the things we've always talked about here at the Family Podcast Network is a major part of what we're looking to do here is to connect with other folks that think like us, or think like us on maybe one or two things, but the other things are different. But that's the good part about it is that we're going to come together and help each other and help each other grow and learn from each other. The reality is, I'm going to say probably 90% of everything that I know, really I've learned from someone else or somewhere else. And I think that's an important part of it. That's why community is so valuable. And so the Family Podcast Network is about referencing and pulling together, a series of community in the parenting world. So that way you guys have at your fingertips, the ability to ask people in their specialty areas. And so anyway, hearing her call back is a neat thing for me because that's in a lot of ways, I see this as kind of the beginning of the vision of Family Podcast Network, moving beyond just this guy podcasting, which is a big piece of it, but moving into that community centeredness of it is cool to me. I mean, it's cool. Anyway, I wanted to play that for you guys. All right. With all of that out of the way today, thanks for going for a little bit longer intro segment today. Let's jump into our topic for today, which again, is our featured presentation that we like to do called Media Sucks Monday. Yeah.
The media sucks! The media sucks!
That's right. This is the episode where we like to sit down and we pull articles that you guys send to me. They say, Trey, we want you to talk about this. What do you think about this? You know, if I'm not careful, I can get a lot of these per week. So I have to be very, very careful with what all I put on here because, you know, there's just so much of them. So what I always look for is I look for patterns. And sometimes you guys send me the same one 5 or 10 times. Sometimes you guys, you know, send me maybe not the exact same one, but they all kind of come together. And so what I do is I look for the patterns in those. And so this week there was definitely a pattern that I think we had to respond to. And so we're going to go through those. The first one for today was sent in to us by Sammy. And she sent me this article. It came from the cafemom.com. It said, "Are parents who homeschool qualified to teach their kids?" And it's written by an Andrew Carden. He writes, "My wife is a teacher, an earth science teacher for the 8th grade. Yeah, I don't get it either. Super boring subject, worst grade in the world to teach. With all those raging hormones." She goes, "When we first got married, she went through all the necessary training to become a teacher, the ridiculous amount of studying, planning, student teaching. She even had to videotape herself giving a lesson as well as undergo a number of classroom observations. In other words, it wasn't as simple as grabbing the ruler and heading out of the classroom and bam, you're a teacher. Which is why I'm completely baffled by the entire homeschooling arena." Now, as a side note here, I know some of you guys are much like me, and I know we've got a lot of homeschoolers out in the field, and so are we. And so your question may be, why, Trey, are you allowing this kind of talk to be uttered from thine microphone, right? I mean, I get that. However, here's the reason why. There is no better way for you to understand what you believe better than to go around somebody who believes the absolute opposite. I'm telling you, there's no better way. Because they will ask the questions that nobody else is afraid to ask because they're not afraid of damaging your little perspective or belief about something. And they're going to ask you the hard stuff. And if you can do it, and if you can find that person who's able to do it and who's willing to do it with a kind heart and not in a mean, hurtful, angry place, right? If you can find somebody who's willing to do that, they can be so advantageous to you because they make you think. And they make you answer those questions, and we're gonna use this question today. This was written by Andrew, and so he asked the good questions. He goes, "I'm not trying to bash anybody here, but I really have no clue how homeschooling works. I mean, how are regular parents even qualified to teach their kids when public school teachers need to go through such rigorous training?" So there's question number one: how are regular parents qualified to teach their kids? The answer is, we're not. We're not. The reality is we're not all science teachers, we're not all geometry teachers, we're not all chemistry teachers, we're not all literature teachers, we are not all U.S. history teachers. We may have, you know, elements of understanding in each one of those. We may have mastery level understanding in each one of those. Unlikely, but we probably have some level of mastery, at least in one of those, that we are qualified to do it. For the rest of them, we're not. We're not qualified to portray the ideologies of an entire high school or an entire elementary school. So why do these two not work together very well? You see, the homeschooling that I endorse here at the Family Podcast Network is not actually called just pure homeschooling. Sorry, guys, I've got to take a sip of tea tonight. It's actually what we call unschooling. And it is the premise that the entire ideology of traditionalized modern public education system is flawed. At best, it is flawed in its very nature. That the mentality of shoving kids into a classroom to which we teach them subjects they have no enjoyment, love, passion, or connection to why they're going to need it in the future, underneath a dialectical back and forth dialogue between us, like a lecture style thing. I'm going to talk at you and you're going to learn this and memorize it. We reject that that mentality works at all. So the question being, how can we be qualified to teach our kids when public schools need to go through such rigorous training? We can't be. Here's the other thing. Neither are public school teachers either. Don't get me wrong. There are wonderful teachers. There are wonderful teachers that manage to get into that very subject that they absolutely love. But the reality is that many teachers are not teaching what they love to do. They're doing their absolute best to teach a curriculum to the students that have been approved by a student or a school board, excuse me. And that's what they're doing. Now, I am not dogging on teachers. I am going to inevitably wind up offending teachers. Every single time I've even touched this idea of public versus homeschool, because I have so many of my good friends and so many good listeners that are public school teachers or have family that are public school teachers, and I have pissed some people off with this topic. But the reality is that public school teachers aren't doing much better at teaching these things than we parents are. Now, I know the argument will be, yeah, but Trey, at least they're getting, you know, different people teaching different subjects to them at one time. Again, I reiterate, do they love what they're teaching? Some of them do. Some of them really do love what they're teaching, but some of them are just teaching because they needed somebody to fill that subject and they're doing the best they can. The reality, I believe, is that public schools are not doing any better at teaching this to us than our kids. They're doing their same level of attempt. So if the question was, in fact, modified, how can parents go through educating their kids and not go nuts because it takes so much work, as it would take so much work for anybody, how do they not go bananas? The answer to that lies in this right here. When you want something bad enough, you make it happen. I spent so much time on a counseling and therapeutic level inside schools working with kids that I am so motivated to keep my kids out of public school that it just doesn't matter. Now, I'm also not the guy who's the primary caregiver during the day either. But my wife is no different in terms of her belief system. She was actually the first person to suggest homeschooling long before I'd even thought of it as a kid. I mean, I was the product of a public school, and I thought my kids were going to go to one too. And she was the first one to enter it, and I was like, no, it's just not going to happen that way. And it wasn't until I got several of these jobs that I got to see what it was like in the school systems. I quickly began to realize that the educational experience that I had was a very unique one. And those experiences are out there. Don't get me wrong. Just because you can read doesn't mean you're qualified to teach your kids. Sure, every parent is a teacher in his or her own right. We all teach our kids morals, hygiene, the ways of the world. But I'm talking about a full-fledged education here. The kind of learning that will help them earn the master the English language, conquer the Pythagorean theorem, and understand exactly why volcanoes might erupt. Now, this really isn't a question that he puts in here. But if you summarized what he's saying here, what makes you think that you're qualified to teach your kids about the English language, conquering the Pythagorean theorem, or teaching your kids exactly why volcanoes erupt? What makes you think that you are qualified to do that? In most cases, we're not. But here's the issue. All of the things that we're talking about here is information. And information can be learned, and information can be taught. So if this is an issue, I'm going to read this again. The kind of learning that will help them master the English language. I want to ask you guys this. How many public schools are giving kids a mastery level understanding of the English language? How many schools are giving kids a mastery level understanding of the Pythagorean theorem? How many schools are doing that? Based off of the tax test or whatever, you know, state you live in and your national, you know, acquired level from the No Child Left Behind, you know, test, how many of them are mastering these subjects in public schools? Here's what I'll argue, probably none of them. Nobody's got a mastery level of it. I'm not saying they don't have a good understanding. I'm not saying that they're getting some good parts of education here. I am not saying the public education system is horrible. Guys, I'm a product standing here teaching behind this microphone. I'm a product of a public school system. I was not homeschooled. My point is this. Their parents are getting tired of the fact that the schools are not producing any higher levels than they could get if they stayed home. Oh, here we go. Here's my favorite part. And then, of course, there's the entire social aspect of school. Yes, there are bullies and food fights and detention and way too many cliques. But school really is just a microcosm of the real world. It's one thing to protect and shelter your young kids from harm, but what happens when these kids grow up, get a job, and face the types of obnoxious people in the real world? Will they be able to cut it? You see, the reason why I like featuring this, because there's so many people that are so snotty about how they ask these questions. And I want to give Andrew some credit. I really think he's asking these questions. I think that he has a predisposition, a bias already involved in his mindset of the way he's thinking. But I really think that there's a small part of him that is asking these questions. So let's break down this idea. But school is really just a microcosm of the real world. It's one thing to protect and shelter your kids from harm, but what happens when these kids grow up, get a job, and face the obnoxious people that exist in the real world? You see, there's an erroneous mindset here. It's that if you take your kids home and you homeschool them all day, that your main job, your primary thing is you're trying to shield them from harm. A good parent understands that kids need to experience a level of failure. Over at the Family Podcast Network's Facebook page, again, that's facebook.com/Family Podcast Network, I posted up a picture, and the words on it said, parents need to fill a child's bucket of self-esteem so high that the rest of the world can't poke holes to drain it dry. My question in that, when I asked it on this Facebook page, was, okay, but how? And the answers were just overwhelmingly amazing. For instance, for one of them, Elisa said, I'd say that it is accomplished by letting kids try things on their own and by letting them fail and focusing hard on how they try it instead of the outcome and not praising every little thing so they know only to do good things to get praise. Amy actually put on here, she goes, praise the effort, not the achievement. They'll gain pride in their hard work and perseverance and feel confident that they can achieve bigger goals. If they stumble on the way and they need help, sit and brainstorm with them on options and choices and then send them on their way to try again. Rick said, in part, by letting them fail, fall down, and pick themselves up. Only lend a hand when they are able, when they are unable to get back up. These answers are so fantastic. It's like you guys are an amazing set of folks to be around here. Those exactly, I think, are the answers. You see, pulling kids home in a homeschooling perspective, for most parents, I think, is not about protecting kids from harm, but it's about putting kids in a situation where we can govern a little bit better about what harm is going to come their way. A good parent shouldn't be taking their kid home to never let them fail again. Your kid absolutely needs to experience failures over and over and over and learn how to grow from those things. That's the whole part of life is learning. It's not about how many things we get right. It's about how good are we at becoming adaptive of overcoming the things that we don't enjoy in our lives. About growing from those things that are difficult. And so this mentality comes from a very skewed perspective here. But what happens when these kids grow up, get a job, and face the same type of obnoxious people in the real world? Trust me, I will tell you, as a homeschooling dad, they still face these obnoxious type of people. There's still plenty of time that we get to go out to the park and experience these people. There's plenty of times that they get to experience them at church and Awanas and GAs and RAs and all that other good jazz. These kids are out there. They don't get hidden from those things. But you know, there's an underlying mentality of this that just absolutely pisses me off. And here's what it is. Here's what I hear out of this. And I don't think Andrew's trying to be a turd about this, but I think it's and I'm not mad at him. But I am mad at what I believe to be a lie that he's bought into. What I hear him saying is, your lot is to go into your life, find crappy people that are going to be in your life, and then you're just going to have to deal with them like a victim. That's what I hear in this. Those kind of obnoxious people are just going to be in the world, and we're just going to have to deal with them. Don't get me wrong, guys. I understand that these people are there. What I don't like is that this is what I hear them saying is, you should, if you're getting mad at the public school because they have bullies in them, you should just deal with it because that's life. Well, you know what? That's bullcrap. Bullies don't get to say bullies just because we let them run all over us. Bullies don't get to survive and thrive in a situation where people draw boundaries to them. And I think the mentality of this is bullies are out there. You're just going to have to deal with them. Heck no, man. Bullies are absolutely a part of this world. And don't get me wrong, your kid needs to become absolutely adroit in learning how to handle people that like to use bullying to manipulate. They've got to learn how to deal with that, and I'm not disagreeing with that. What I'm disagreeing with is I don't think the answer is to throw them into a public school where these kids often have unfettered access to our children who are trying so desperately to figure out who they are and what they are. And some of these bullies can get so rotten, I'm telling you, it can destroy and even put people to the point where they die. Now, if you're telling me that that's this kind of survival of the fittest caca that I keep hearing, I mean, sure, that's fine. I mean, if you want to run your kids that way, that's fine. Do I like think that they're like destined to be in a bad spot? No, I think some kids come out of school just fine and they never have to deal with this. That's not the approach that will I want to do it. So the last question that he asked is, will they be able to cut it? The answer is, if we do it right, yes, they'll absolutely be able to cut it. And here's what I'll even argue. They'll be able to cut it better than those who go through public schools in terms of the social aspect, right? He goes on to say, half the school is actual book learning. The other half is social skill learning. Learning how to make friends, learning how to deal with or ignore enemies, learning responsibility, cooperation, team building, and independence, etc. See, this is the only part that I'm just a little bit like, you know what? You know, Andrew, you're a jerk, man. Because what I'm hearing is the only place that you can get the things like social skill learnings, whether it's making friends or how to ignore enemies or responsibility, cooperation, team building, independence, is you must go to public school. I find that slightly arrogant. Maybe I'm a little hypersensitive here. I don't know. But I find that to be very arrogant. Now, the only reason I'm not dogging on Andrew is he's very clear. I don't know. I don't know what homeschooling is like. He's running to a traditionalized stereotype of homeschooling and then running with that. But I understand. It's an easy one to get confused. I'll tell you that until my wife had sold me on this idea and I had gone into the schools, I mean, I had the same mentalities. And I even had the same arguments. But I think that's why we got to, and like I said, I think Andrew addresses these some of the best I've seen. Home offers a place of refuge from school. Had a tough day, you can just head home after school and relax a bit, out of sight, out of mind. But if you're homeschooled, you actually live in school. There's no escape from it. You don't even have homework, or rather, everything you do is homework. There is no escape. Again, erroneous thinking. School, in reality, for my kids to get the amount of school, first off, I want to be very clear here. We do a thing called unschooling. It's very non-traditional, very, I guess, strange compared to most standards. We don't do curriculums. We don't have a book. We don't require them to do a certain amount. We don't test them and quiz them at the end of the semester. We allow them to learn at the rate that they want to learn. Our goals as parents is to get them connected with the information that they need. So when they want to learn something new about something, we give them the things to help them learn that. But they are on their own to learn. Not on their own, but in terms of the process of actually garnishing that information, putting it in and processing it to the point that they could retrieve it and give it back, we leave that in their hands. We just provide the resources. But let me tell you this. I've got a lot of friends and a lot of families, and I've got many, many folks that I've worked with on this show who homeschool their kids. And I've got many of them that they love curriculum, and they adopt curriculum, and they use curriculum, and they enjoy curriculum, and they believe that it is the end all to it, and they put it into practice. And they all tell me that their kids know how much homework they've got to get done, and the assignments that they have to have done. And most of them get up, they go to work at 8, and they're done by 11:30. And they have the rest of the day to play, to do whatever they want. And they get all their work and their studies done in that amount of time. The reality is, when it comes to public school, the entire 8 hours of day is very unnecessary. It's very unnecessary. It's not needed. And in most cases, we've structured the way school starts and the way school ends around parents' work days. Glorified babysitting in most cases. Don't get me wrong, we're giving them education in there. But the biggest part about the hours that we use is about babysitting. So let's see, he said it's a refuge. Everything you do is homework, there is no escape. I mean that's just ignorant thinking. This guy's not stupid, he just doesn't know. I'm not saying that I'm completely against unschooling. I just don't understand the benefits of it at all. What makes it a better experience than public school education? First off, homeschooling by the state of it being, is not better than public school. It's just not. There are public schools, if they could get a system that worked right, I think could make something so powerful that even homeschooling couldn't keep up with it. Right now, in this current day and age, I do believe that it is better than most all public schools. So what makes it a better experience? Number one, it's one-on-one interaction with your kids. You're allowed to tailor to their learning style very specifically. Number two, you can more effectively plug in the passions and the loves and the things that they enjoy doing directly into their learning style. My son has had no desire to read, but you better believe that I let him play Halo long enough and he can't read what's going on Halo. It has frustrated him to the point that he has walked in, grabbed his homework, and said, "Dad, I'm ready to do some homeschool because I got to learn how to read." He sat down. I started teaching him. Older sister heard. I think I've told the story before. Our older sister heard, came in, started teaching him too. And eventually I was able to step back and they were sitting there doing a lesson together because my son wanted to read. Now, how many places does a kid get to go and play Halo to the point that he wants to learn how to read on his own? I didn't ask him to pull a book out. We don't give him a schedule. He just did it. Then you also got the benefit of kids being able to determine and self-govern themselves. You know, one of the things about public school is that it's all driven. You're going to do this at this time. You're going to clock in. You're going to check out. You're going to have your lunch break. You're going to do this time. Then you're going to go home, right? It's all no kid gets to set their own pace. I've got kids that do amazing in the morning. They roll out of bed and they're ready to go and they're kicking and screaming and fighting and ready to play, right? That's my son, Grant. But I've got kids that are groggy and, oh, my daughter, Anna, 7 years old, man, she's, she needs to warm up and she's not really ready to roll until after lunch. And it allows a kid to be able to tailor to where they learn the best and where they learn the most efficiently. Again, not something that you can do in public schools. So I'm not going to run through the entire exhaustive list of this. I could keep on going in terms of the benefits of it. But yes, there are absolute benefits to it. It is absolutely wonderful. How do you round out your child's social interactions? I think we've answered that. How do you separate home life from school life, or is it entirely linked? Great question. That's actually a great question. And the answer is it varies. My daughter, Anna, is very much like my wife, Corey, and she is very structured, and she is very organized, and she is very compartmentalized, so she's kind of a waffler. She's, you know, she starts, it's like, so if you're filling up waffles, she's that kind that doesn't just squirgle it all over the place. She's that one, she fills up one of the waffle squares, and then goes to the next, and then goes to the next, and goes to the next, and she doesn't go to the next one until that last one's filled full. She misses something, she goes back and finishes it before she goes back to that next one again. She's just very compartmentalized in how she thinks. So she likes that ability to be able to just set her schedule and bop, 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 bop. However, my son, on the other hand, is very, very different. He just kind of likes to work on things for a little bit and then take a little break and go do something and then get back to work on it for a little bit more and go do something. And really, if you look at it in terms of the efficiency of how they get things done during the day, they get the same amount done. The only difference being is that they break it up in different ways. Anna just likes to get, she likes to preload and get everything done. My son likes to spend more time throughout the entire day. But I want to kind of wrap it up on kind of the last question that Andrew asked in here that I think is really good. He said, "I guess the biggest thing I don't understand is how any parent can just grab a book and curriculum and start teaching their kids at home. No observations, testing, license, and certification, etc." It's a great question. How can a parent sit down and just grab a book? Number one, we don't in most cases. We do the best we can with what we've got, but we seek out resources when we don't have it. If you really want to get down to it, there are a ton, I mean a ton, of stuff that you can look for online to teach your kids anything. Need to teach your kids algebra? There's stuff online. You want to teach your kids how to multiply in their head? There's stuff on YouTube. You want to teach your kids about U.S. history? There's stuff out there. You can take free courses from MIT if you really want to, and your kids can do it from the comfort of their own home at the rate that they want to do it. So in most cases, we can't just do that. The other half side of that is most parents that take a look at the idea of homeschooling are pretty sharp. They just are. They're pretty knowledgeable. And if they're not knowledgeable, they're resourceful and they figure out how to do it. And let me tell you, my daughter has asked me questions about biology and science that I had no freaking clue. I got the classic Why is the Sky Blue the other day, and I had to go sit down and take a look at the frequencies in terms of atmospheric conditions and stuff like that before I came back and explained it to her. The answer is we don't have all those questions. In some cases, the questions have always been, "Dad, what causes this? Hey, I don't know, let's go look that up." And we get on Google and we do a search and we look around until we find some credible sources and put together a theory on why we think these things work based off of the information that's out there. I teach my kids to be resourceful as well. The purpose of public school education or homeschooling education is not to give your kids freaking information. The purpose of education is to give your kid a love for learning. Because if we just sit there and fill our kids with information, if we do nothing but load them up on when the freaking Spanish Armada was, information that is just totally redundant, they don't really actually need, they're not ever going to give back in any meaningful manner, instead of the lessons that we learn from the Spanish Armada, then kids are going to forget this stuff. That is not an education. That's memorization. Real education is about giving a kid a fundamental love to learn stuff. That is the purpose of a homeschooling mom and dad, is to cause our kids to fall in love with information so much and learning new things and taking those situations and applying them to their lives that they go out and do it on their own. We don't go reach out and grab a book, a curriculum, and just start teaching our kids. Or at least you shouldn't be. What you should be doing is causing to do something in your kids' lives that cause them to fall in love with learning new information and synthesizing it and practicing it. First off, he says, no observations. I mean, really? Does observations really make better teachers? I'm asking anybody out there who's a public teacher, does the observation that you get in your own, when you get somebody watching you, does that really make you a better teacher? And I'm sure some of you are like, yeah, it is. No, I'm talking about majority. No testing. Really? Really? How many really bad teachers have we had come through that received all the same testing? Licensing? I mean, come on. Listen to these things. These are platitudes. These are those things that we'd say that we're going to do to try to benchmark teachers, to try to make ourselves feel better about putting somebody in this hot seat of teaching our kids. But these things can be lied through and falsified. You know, I don't mean like people are like sneaking into the office and falsifying their license or anything, or making like a, you know, a fake copy because they know a guy, right? I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about they can go through and get the real license and the real observation, the real testing and the real certifications and walk out and be a horrible teacher. These are platitudes. They just make us feel better when we see these things. What makes a good teacher is how much they can make a flipping kid think. This might be a bit extreme, but if you need to have surgery, would you go to a doctor who taught himself medicine purely at his own on home? Or would you rather go to the one who graduated from a top medical school and learned from experienced hand-on teachers? I would rather go to the one who knows how to do appropriate surgery. And if somebody can do that from learning at home because they had really good education and they fell in love with it and they learned and taught themselves, yeah, I would go to that one. So now I can already hear it. Oh, come on, Trey. Now you're just being irrational. No. Guys, I'm really not. I've seen the values and the benefits of what a homeschooled kid can do now. I'm too far gone. I'm too far disillusioned with the public schools. I've seen the capabilities and the capacities of somebody who genuinely falls in love with learning new things that they're genuinely and authentically fascinated by. For me to believe in some false idol that if we can just get them to public schools where they have hands-on experienced teachers, that that in some way makes amazing surgeons. Because it doesn't. You can make a lot of good ones that way. Sure. I do agree with that. You can make good surgeons. But great anything comes from a love of learning new stuff. And I do not see that getting facilitated in our public schools today. Let me phrase that. I do not see that getting facilitated in the majority of public schools today. Let's go ahead and move on, guys. I'm sorry I get so fired up about that one. But that was a good... Thank you again to Sammy for referring that out. Great article. Next article was sent over to us by Jamie, an article called Despite Warnings, About 24,000 Kids Are Hurt Annually in Shopping Cart Accidents. All right, guys, hang on to your butt. Jamie writes to me, all she put on this was, oh my God, Dre. Although a voluntary shopping cart standard was implemented in the United States in 2004, the number and rate of concussions and close-head injuries to children associated with shopping carts continued to climb. Oh, man. The study looked at data involving children younger than 15 years of age who were treated for shopping cart-related injuries in emergency departments from 1990 through 2011. An estimated 530,494 injured children were documented during a study period, averaging more than 24,000 children annually, or 66 children per day treated in an emergency department. I'm sorry, guys. Falls from a shopping cart accounted for the majority of injuries, 70.4%. I'm not even going to read the rest of that crap to you right there. Guys, first off, I'm going to say some things today. I don't want this to come off as sounding, though, I don't think that, like, kids falling out of carts is a big deal. Because, I mean, there is an element that it is a big deal. But we'll talk a little bit more here in just a minute. While soft tissue injuries were the most common diagnosis for these head injuries, the annual rate of concussions and closed head injuries increased from 1990 to 2011 by, like, about 9,000 injuries, right? The findings from our study show that the current volume of standards for shopping cart safety are not adequate and should be improved, said Gary Smith, director of the Center for Injury Research and Policy at Nationwide Children's Hospital. So here's the question. Kids are falling out of carts, and they're banging their heads up pretty bad. We'll talk here in a little bit more, but I went to read what are the most common injuries, and most of them are head bashing your head, and the other ones are like getting their fingers caught in the wheels and stuff like that, and that's what's causing them to make it to the hospital. So these are very real things. I mean, these really are happening. So the question is it because our voluntary standards for shopping cart safety aren't adequate? In other words, we need to make our shopping carts more safe. No. This isn't an issue of shopping carts, guys. There's lots of different things that are at play here. But, I mean, the number one thing is parents aren't watching their kiddos. Guys, I've done this before, too. Before I offend somebody, I've had the ever classic where I had a kid in the cart and another kid jumped on the side while I wasn't standing next to it, and the cart tipped over. Scared everybody. We had a couple bumps and bruises. It is friggin' embarrassing when it happens. And well, let me tell you, when you're in the middle of an embarrassing situation like that, you want it to be anything else but what it was. I wasn't paying freaking attention. I walked away to grab some groceries and I came back. There's no harm in that. There's no law that says I can't do that, right? There's absolutely true. But I left my kids unattended next to the cart just so much that they could get in there and do a little flippity-do. My wife has done it as well. But here's what I'm here to tell you. Nobody died. We got some bangs. We got some bruises. Yes, I'm sure there's going to be some kids that are going to have concussions. But I don't think that this is call to run to our cart association and have them improve things. Suggested designs, reading on, guys. Suggested designs include improving performance standards for restraint systems and placing child in seating area near floor. The latter design change would be safer because it would reduce the risk of cart flipping over by lowering the center of gravity in the cart and decreasing the risk of injury. In addition to the design changes, researchers noted that interventions included teaching parents how to safely use shopping carts. I don't know why we should have to do that, but you know what? If we need to, that's absolutely... That's fine. I mean, I think if parents aren't going to know that they can't walk away from their shopping carts with kids in the basket and whatnot, that they could very well get hurt. Store ride broadcasting, encouraging safety belt use, and having more store employees encourage families to use the cart safety belts would also help reduce the number of shopping cart related injuries. You see, I am not opposed to the idea of let's try to keep our kids from falling out of carts and getting bonked. I agree. I get it. It's impossible not to want to put kids in there sometimes because it's just faster. It's easier for us to get around the store, and it's just a wonderful thing. We were in Walmart today. I think every single one of our four kids was in a basket, and they enjoyed it, right? And there's, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. However, there comes a point to where we've got to be responsible with that. For instance, take a good example is that we've made it very clear here at the FPN that the Gibson household is a very firearm-friendly household. We love firearms. We love to shoot. We love to shoot in pistols, shotguns, rifles, everything, right? We also acknowledge that in the addition of something that can potentially be very damaging to tissue, like a firearm, there comes a responsibility level that we have to hold ourselves higher to. It's just the nature of it. We have to be more careful. And carts are no different. We've got to be responsible with them, guys. Do I think that we need to have a legislation that says that all carts need to be changed on this? No. We just need to stop being doofuses with the carts we've got. We've also got to start acknowledging that sometimes kids are going to fall over and go boom. And instead of, you know, giving them more things that make it more difficult to stand up and fall over, what we need to do is just teach them, hey, don't you remember the last time you did this, goofball? You don't want to fall out of your friggin' cart. Sit down. No, I don't think the answer is legislation. Don't get me wrong. Could we potentially get results out of that? Yeah, probably. What are we really going to get the best results out of? Educating people, educating kids, talking to them, and letting them suffer some natural consequences. That's a big one. Trust me, I understand. I understand and get it. Yes, even though I am very much a guy who believes in letting kids suffer consequences, I use the safety belt every single time on every single one of my infants. All it took was one time that I caught one of those kiddos trying to fall out over the front end of that I never let my kids go without a belt again. Not while they're in there, not while they're that little. So use your little strappy dudes, follow the instructions, all other good jazz. Yeah, do we need to start doing that crap? Yes. The reality is the reason why this frustrates me, they're like, oh, we need to come up with a new set of involuntary standards is blah, blah, blah. This does not allow us to take responsibility for being dumb parents. Yes, I have been a dumb parent, and I've been a dumb parent with this cart. The thing that really produces results in this is for me to go, man, that was a dumb thing to do as a parent, and I admit it. I'm going to change it. Next time when I come in here, I'm going to strap that little sucker in with duct tape if I've got to. Right? We've got to start taking responsibility for ourselves as parents, or else how are we ever going to expect our kids to grow up and take responsibility for themselves? Instead, they're going to be looking to legislation to fix their problems for them. We've got to start stepping up and quit being dumbheads. I'm not trying to be rude, guys. I want to make sure that I go and reiterate this again. I've been this parent who's allowed this crap to happen to my kids. We've got to start stepping up and taking responsibility. Then we got to teach our kids, listen, when you stand up, you got to start taking responsibility for the fact you're going to tump out of it. Run into legislation to get more flippant things to say you got to do this to your cart is not the answer. Own up to your mistakes and take responsibility. Let's move on. I want to say thank you again to Jamie for sending that over here. I mean, that was a great article. This last one was shot over to me by Brian. And Brian sent me this one. It's written by a lady named Amy Joyce. It says, girls' toys, boys' toys. Oi, I love this, guys. This has been a major. This is one of the ones that you guys sent me a ton of these on. Wanted to know about this. Amy writes, a while back, I bought Legos Friends for my son's pal. This is a line of Legos that is sort of a feminized spinoff featuring pink and purple blocks and characters that do things like sit at a cafe or run a bakery. I have two boys, so I get a kick out of buying feminine things when I get the chance. But I felt a little strange buying Legos that are Legos, only pink. A friend of mine said that she felt manipulated. She bought them for her daughter and then asked herself why. The pink blocks at her house are now mixed in with the regular ones, just one color in a rainbow of plastic. Should we care that a company is marketing its products differently to different audiences? Or should we just note the phenomenon and move on? We're consumers and we can make choices, right? You may have seen the now viral letter written by 7-year-old Charlotte slamming the company for making a few Lego girl people, most of which do nothing but sit at home and go to the beach and shop. Let me read you guys that little girl's article. This is an actual letter written by this little Charlotte, which I love that name incidentally. I don't know why. She put, "Dear Lego Company, my name is Charlotte. I am 7 years old and I love Legos, but I don't like that there are more Lego boy people and barely any Lego girls. Today I went to a store and saw Legos in two sections, the pink girls and the blue boys. All the girls did was sit at home and go to the beach and shop. And they had no jobs, but the boys went on adventures, worked, saved people, and had jobs, even swam with sharks. I want you to make more Lego people and let them go on adventures and have fun, okay?" From Charlotte. First off, what a wonderful letter. This little kiddo's got it figured out. So we've seen that. She goes, so the letter written by 7-year-old Charlotte, slamming the company for making few Lego people, most of whom just sit at home, go to the beach, and shop, while a wide array of boys go on exciting adventures. She's right, but we're still buying the lame girl characters. So let's stop here and just kind of start breaking this down. Now, first off, this concern that this lady's bringing up, I actually agree with. I do have a problem with how much our toy companies market to women and men, or maybe I should say boys and girls in this case, in very defining ways. So boys are about ninjas and activities and aggression and fighting and shooting. And guys, I have no problems with any of these things if y'all can't tell. You know, they're about warfare and they're about, you know, science and adventure. And girls are about babies and sweeping. I mean, literally, we had friends that actually gave us, you know, whenever one of my daughters turned older, they gave her an entire cleaning set, you know, that had a vacuum cleaner and stuff like that. Now, she said, but we're still buying the same lame girl characters. I want to make sure that I'm very clear. This is the one thing that I was a little frustrated with when it comes to what Amy wrote here. Lame girl characters. I do not consider those to be lame girl characters. I think that there are some girls that grow up and those kinds of things are important to them. Do I care if girls are girly girls that like pink. No, my daughter Cora is becoming a girly little flipping girl. And let me tell you, there are a few environments that I've ever gotten to meet that help combat the necessity for kids to become that more than this household right here. My oldest daughter is turning into a little scientist biologist. That's just what she's becoming. And we're going to foster the crap out of that. But it all comes down to this. We've got a little girly girl who's coming up. So I disagree with her statement here. It's not the issue is not about pushing girls away from pink and frilly. It's not about pushing girls out of wanting to sit at home or go to the beach and shop or be homemakers or take care of babies. It's not about pushing girls away from that. It's about opening them up to make the frickin' choice that they want to make. It's about giving them that opportunity that if they want to be, you know, swimming with sharks, they can. It's about giving girls the opportunity that if they want to go on adventures and do amazing, wild, and crazy things, that they can. That's the issue that we're talking about. And some of them are going to want to take on that adventure and that challenge of staying home with babies. Some of them are going to want to do that. When my wife and I got married, we sat down and had a talk, and I said, listen, I'm not one of those men that says you need to stay home with kids. If you want to get a job and go be successful, we want to have kids, I'll be a stay-at-home dad. I don't care. I can deal with it. But I want to make sure that we're both on the same page. And my wife says, no, I want to stay home with kids. It's a choice we made. So the idea behind this is that, and I agree with where at least they're starting this article out with, is that yes, there is a level where we push kids. I mean, you got to admit, there's two different, in the toy aisle at Walmart, there's what two colors? The blue aisle and the pink aisle. We all know that. Little kids can tell that. The author Amy went ahead and joined, and she says, I've been a part of many conversations about appalling girls versus boy toy aisles. I'll add that it's tough for me, too. It took me forever to find a kitchen for my guys that wasn't pink or purple with glittery hearts all over it. But then that's the only example that I can think of. You're a parent of a girl. How do you fight the tide? Let's take a look at everything that spelled sweet, innocent playtime that when we were small and how it looks now. Even Strawberry Shortcake and Hobby Lobby have gotten sort of, well, sexy. Seriously, have you seen Strawberry Shortcake? Everybody remember Strawberry Shortcake when we were kids? She's kind of a little frumpy little girl, right? I mean, she looked like almost more human than ever. But little Strawberry Shortcake now has got the big doe eyes and this little skinny figure and a little just, you know, tight-fitting clothes. I mean, seriously, I mean, it's nuts, man. It's nuts. The change in these toys is there, and it will continue. But you can fight if you pay attention to what's on your shelves at home. And if you can actually send that letter to your 7-year-old who wrote to the company who makes your toys. I think that is so good. This is so good. We've gotten so gender specific in the things that we want to see our kids be and do. We've never stopped to ask ourselves, does our little girl want to be a NASCAR driver? Does she want to drive for Indy 500? Does she want to be an MMA fighter? My wife and I were watching a show just the other day, and there was this one particular lady. We were watching the show Almost Human. And there was this one, cybernetic cyborg that was running around, and she was a military made one, and she was just kicking butt in the show. And I looked over at my wife and I said, I think this lady knows what she's doing. And my wife did a little IMDb and search on her, and sure enough, she's one of the top MMA fighters. And let me tell you, she was kicking butt, and she made me believe it. And I think it's because she knew how to kick butt for reals. What if a girl wants to be an MMA fighter? What if she wants to be a scientist? What if a boy wants to stay home with kids? I mean, I want you to think of this. What if you've got a guy who wants to be a nurse or a daycare center? Run a daycare, you know, be a technician at a daycare center. What if we have these things? The purpose of this question, the purpose of these toys, it's not about forcing girls out of traditionalized roles. It's about making sure that they know that traditionalized roles is just a choice. One of many. And they have the opportunity and the ability to choose those things. You see, I don't think parents like that because we would rather that our kids just pick up on our values because they feel that they have to. That exempts us from needing to explain them to them in a way that is rational. Why do we keep my wife a stay-at-home mom? We keep my wife a stay-at-home mom because she is tender and loving and kind and because she wanted to be there. Because we did not want to put them into a public school where other people are teaching our kids that don't know them or their learning styles better than we do. We do it because we care. We don't do it because it's easy. We do it because they are that important to us. Well, let me rephrase that. Because that is that important for us to show them. But if we're backing our kids into pre-described roles, you must be this and you must be that. It's not a good thing. Again, I want to be very clear here. I'm not talking about this being a, what did the author call it, a lame girl character. This isn't lame. The only thing that is lame in this is that we are not giving kids the authentic choice to choose. What do they want to be? And that's what I want you to offer your kids. Give them that opportunity. Let little boys carry around little babies. Let little girls make a bazooka out of a toilet paper roll. It's fine. And by God, it's okay if our little girls wind up swimming with sharks and our boys wind up having a kitchen set. It's good. Well, all right, guys, that's all that we have for this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Don't forget to come join us this Wednesday, where we're going to knock out another show of the Family Podcast Network, as well as this Friday, where we're going to have another episode of the Real Family Guys podcast. If nothing else, hope you guys have a great day and a great week. Don't forget to go check us out on Stitcher and iTunes. If I could ask a favor of you guys, run over to iTunes for me and leave me a little feedback over there. It should just help boost us up over there and get some more eyes on the show. Hey, you guys have a great day and great week. We will see you guys on Wednesday.